Welcome to the Resume Storyteller, bringing you interviews with industry experts, regular folks who tested the job search waters and succeeded, and strategies to tell your story and land you job interviews. Here's your host, Virginia Franco.
Hey guys, I have with me career coach Eric Fuentes. As a husband, father, and engineer turned career coach, Eric has been helping people to find and land jobs for over 5 years. As an expert in job search do's and don'ts, his mission is to help parents take ownership of their careers and to always be prepared so that they do not have to fear the job hunt, both for their own sake and that of their families. So Eric, thank you for coming on my podcast. I love your voice on LinkedIn. That's when I first learned about you. And thank you for joining me and for bearing with me as I go through technology difficulties with the podcast. That 5 minutes and I realized we weren't recording.
Well, thank you so much, Virginia. As I said, I'm super honored to be here. And I'm so glad to be able to chat with you and talk about this topic that can be so difficult for many.
No, it is. And I'd love to hear about a little bit about the services that you provide and also to find out about what drove you to launch your own practice, because so many people, you know, none of us really come into this industry thinking that we want to help job seekers as part of our career. It's not something that most of us discover until a little bit later on. So I'd love to hear a bit about your journey.
Yeah. So regarding services, I help people on the job hunt. Particularly, I focus on helping them get noticed and get interviews. And we can talk about things afterwards. So, but I'm actually pivoting a little bit. And I'll go into that. And I'm pivoting to more of a proactive approach so that rather than you going into the job hunt thinking, oh no, I'm laid off or my job became so toxic that I have to leave it. And you feel like so stressed out because honestly, you haven't done anything regarding your career or job hunt preparation for years that naturally you're scared. So my approach is now to help individuals. And the way I got to this is actually going back to my days in college because I had always had a desire to help people, train them and so I did that through being a TA, even unofficially being a TA. And then when I graduated is when the reality hit me of, hey, I have a piece of paper now, but that doesn't guarantee I'm going to get a job.
Right.
And so I would apply, and I would always think I should be getting calls, but nothing is happening. So I started a networking group with my friends and we started figuring out what works and what doesn't. We share resources and more than anything, the support was incredible. And, next year, next graduating class, by then we had jobs. And so we reached out and asked the next graduating class, what are you guys doing about the job hunt? And they were doing the exact same things we were doing, which weren't working. So we began to teach them again. And so that's where I started learning some of the initial best practices, particularly regarding your resume and networking. And after a while, after a few years of doing this, focused mostly on students, that's where I had a friend and career coach who basically said, you know, you can do some things that you really enjoy. And that's where she helped me discover that I really enjoy coaching others, especially on this process, which can be so difficult. And at first I didn't think it was something I could do. I was like, well, I'm an engineer. I get a pretty decent paycheck. I don't know how career coaching is going to meet that. But ultimately, she helped me find ways to bridge those gaps and decided to ultimately do something I really enjoy, which is being able to help people one-on-one, see the transformations. And so I'm here, you know, just helping people with the skills I've gained for years, the classes I've taken, and just from the mentors that I've had that have helped me so much.
Well, I am absolutely amazed that right out of school, you'd already recognized the power of networking and to the point where you started a group, because many people don't come to that until much later on. And the fact that you were already helping those a year below you to avoid pitfalls and share best practices that's really quite remarkable. I don't think I ever reflected back on my own job search until 15 years after the fact.
No, it was.
I applaud you for that.
No, thank you. It was definitely something that came about because of that group. because while we were meeting, we saw each other's flaws, and they had to be an intimate enough group that we could, that we were comfortable sharing these things, right? Sharing like, hey, I'm applying to 500 resumes and I've heard from nothing, right? It's a very vulnerable admission. At that point is when we realized there's some things that we're not doing right. And it's not just one person, it's a lot of us. And being able to admit that and get that support, just knowing that you're not alone was monumental, just because we realized, okay, I'm not the odd man out. I'm not the one that the world is piling up on. And so we were able to, sorry, I got a little bit of a cough there. We were able to share that with others, and we just began to see this, you know, it's like, hey, there's best practices. There's things that actually get you noticed. And networking was something so incredible because you start to tap into those who have already done what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a collective source of strength. You're right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, I wanted to ask you about your LinkedIn picture. Because you have, your headshot features your sweet daughter. And that's a big departure from what so many others share on LinkedIn. How can you speak a little bit about, you know, why you made this choice, why it was important to you and all of that?
No, absolutely. And that's because family is at the center of my coaching. A lot of times when I look at the people I coach, something that I really resonate with is young parents, particularly, you know, people who have others whom they are looking after, supporting. And looking back as to why I did a lot of things in my life, it was for my family. There were times where I had to dig myself out of holes in my career that I dug myself into. But the motivation was my family, my daughter in particular at the time. I have two now, but at the time it was my daughter. So that was there, the picture, to always remind me like why I'm doing this deep down, right? It's not necessarily for just because this makes me happy, or not because it could bring some money, or because of the meetings or the metrics. It was more for the individuals, particularly people who, like me, have children and who want to do better for these children, who want to be in their homes taking care of them. And so that's why I left that picture there with my daughter, because it spoke a bit more as to why I'm doing this. And honestly, being an entrepreneur, I will say it is extremely difficult to always keep a focus on those things. So being able to remember why I'm doing this gives me a lot of clarity.
No, you're right. As an entrepreneur, you wear so many hats. It's hard to draw lines between when you need to work and when you need to be focused on family. How old are your daughters now?
My daughter is 7 and I have a little one that is 5 months old.
Oh my goodness, she's a baby. I'll bet you are run very ragged right now then.
Yeah, my wife helps me quite a bit. She's a stay-at-home mom, so she tends to keep them quiet, which is very nice.
Wow, that's amazing. I wish that I could have figured out how to do that. I could not. So pivoting to job search, I read about, I don't know if I saw it on your website or something you shared on LinkedIn, but you broke down job search into 3 parts. And number 1 was the target. Number 2 was foundations. And then number 3, you labeled networking. And what I love about that is that it, having 3 parts makes the idea of job search to me a little bit less intimidating. But I'd love to spend some time just diving through, you know, breaking down these 3 components, if that works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to.
Okay. So you started with target. Why, in your view, is target the number 1 component?
That is excellent. And I actually spent quite a bit of time teaching a few undergraduates this particular topic. Okay. So target is important because, for one, that is one of the biggest differences I've seen between job seekers, those who actually make progress and end up landing the jobs that actually they like or love, versus others who seem to be lost and they feel like they're not moving in any direction. And that's the difference, the target, right? Some of these individuals, they know what they want. And so because they understand what they wanted, they are able to upskill and bridge the gaps that are keeping them there, overcome the obstacles, because they're moving with purpose. other people who just basically come with a mentality of like, I need anything, right? Or even if it's extremely broad, like for example, engineering, they will say, I want anything in engineering. But there's so many fields, so many roles, so many levels, because they don't have any sort of direction. They will be spreading themselves extremely thin, going for everything. And naturally, they're not moving with purpose in any one direction. So they feel lost, right? They think, I've spent months getting somewhere and I'm not anywhere close. And so it really hurts you on your job search. But more than that, it helps you, it hurts you in your career. Because if you're just thinking anything or leaving it up to the world to decide where you're going to go, you might find that the world is not as forgiving. And it might send you careers that will punish you, or, you know, they can really hurt you or make you feel like, hey, this is not what I want. And so because you don't have that purpose, you're just drifting aboard. So the target is extremely important, not just for your personal development, but also for your career search.
Yeah, no, I agree. In addition to stretching you thin, we know, or no, I've certainly seen this with my clients, that those who have purpose and clarity, they do more work on the front end, but it does fast track the job search. They tend to land more quickly and work that is, you know, aligns with their, that's more meaningful to them. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't thought about the idea that a lack of purpose often can hurt you more long-term, because you're right, it lets others sort of take control of your story.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I've seen, especially with new graduates. They go into anything, any door that's open, any internship, and they go and basically, if they get an internship, for example, in manufacturing, that will lead them to be more likely to get a second internship in manufacturing. And then all of the blue, they think my career is in manufacturing, right? Even though they want to do something else. And so it takes a long time for you to break that mindset of like, hey, I can do something beyond what I've already done. But you need that focus, that target.
Yeah, no, I agree. I focus more on the writing aspect than the coaching piece, but I will not work with a client when they are struggling to figure out what they want to do next. I refer them to someone who helps you to get that clarity. Because to me, it informs everything from what I say in the documents to the companies you reach out to what, you know, how you respond in interviews, all of it. Yeah. What advice can you give to someone on helping them identify a target? How can they get started?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's a juicy question. And that's actually the question a lot of recent graduates will reach out to me with, you know, how do I figure this out? Honestly, depending on where you're at, I would say do your best. As a recent graduate, you don't have to have your life planned out. Most likely, your life is going to take a lot of turns. So just find something that you enjoy and you understand why. And that will take a bit of time, honestly. It will take introspection. Now, the way I help people find that target is by helping them see their past experiences, either their current state, their current job, their current courses, whatever it is that they're doing, and just identify in two categories, what is it that you love about it? And not just like, but love, right? What do you love about it? And then on the second category, what do you hate about it? So completely opposites, but you start to see, hey, these are things that I completely, like, I don't want to do, I hate about this, and these are some things I do. Now we start looking a little farther back into previous experiences, previous jobs, because once you start going farther back where your memory banks are not as good, you start to only recollect the things that actually stuck with you. You know, for example, if somebody gave you a dirty look, you're probably not going to remember that, but you will remember a time where perhaps a manager forced you to work throughout your kid's birthday. Right.
Like they really remember what elicited a strong emotion. Right.
Yes, exactly. And so you start to see these peaks and valleys throughout your previous career, and you start to see, I really love that and I really hated that. And so you start to see patterns, depending on the experiences that you have. And that will change based on where you are in your career. People who are in like mid-level in their careers will have a lot more of those career focused. People who are early in their careers, they probably don't have those in the workforce, but some in their own personal lives. So
Right.
It really depends where you're at. The point is you have to take the time and energy to actually dive into this and be very, very honest with yourself, because that's one thing I will say. A lot of people will default into, I've been told I'm really good at this, and they will be biased and say, I need to do engineering. I need to do.
And just because you're good at it doesn't mean that you love it.
Yes, exactly. And so you have to be able to find out, like, do I really love it? Do I really enjoy it? And understand why. Why is it that I like it? What does it make me feel? You know, what are the outcomes that I have seen, and what did that mean to me as a person? What did it mean to them? And just the more questions, the more you can dive into it, the more you understand it, the easier it becomes for you when you start facing obstacles in that direction, like the job hunt, for example. You start moving with purpose because you say, I know I'm facing this obstacle, but I know why I want the result that comes once I overcome it. So it gives you that fuel to be able to reach your destination.
Okay. Now, do you, Eric, do you work with new graduates as well as mid-career folks? Like who are your chief clients?
Yeah, ideally the targets I'm targeting would be from early in their career to somewhere in the middle. I tend to see my own experiences, and I just connect a lot better with them. But yeah, that's usually my target.
Okay. Nope. That helps me. Okay. So we've talked through the target, that initial piece that gives you the clarity that you need to get momentum and get started. Let's talk about foundations, which is your second stage. What is included in that? What makes up foundations?
Yeah. So I focus particularly on two pieces, and that is your resume and your online presence, your LinkedIn profile, your brand. So those are the two. Do you want me to dive a little deeper into this?
So in terms of online presence, do you also look at the other social medias, or do you focus primarily on LinkedIn?
Primarily on LinkedIn at this point, since it seems to be more career focused. And so you can connect with people who you can very quickly identify if this person is somebody you want to be surrounded by, mentored by, aided by, or somebody whom you can help. It's more difficult than Facebook because you see them not in a professional setting. You have to spend a lot more time identifying who you should be connecting with.
I agree with that. So what are common pitfalls or mistakes that you see? And I guess let's start with the resume.
Yes. Okay. The biggest one I see is, especially for people that are early in their careers, people who have not gone through these trials, is they will create a resume that's tailored for everyone, right? Because again, they don't have a target.
Yeah, so that jack of all trades resume.
Exactly. You're right. They'll just put in every single achievement that they're proud of, even if it doesn't speak to one thing. So if somebody wants to be, for example, a software developer, but they fill their entire resume with, hey, I did things in manufacturing, and I did things in quality, and I was a chess champion. All of these things are great, right? You as a person, you have your list of proud moments, but none of those really speak to somebody looking for a software developer. It's like me saying...
They don't align with the target at all.
Yeah, it doesn't align, right? And usually the analogy I will say is, if I were to say, I'm looking for a chess tutor for my kid, you sending me a resume like that is basically saying, hey, I played checkers once before, right? Of course, I'm not going to hire you because I'm looking for somebody who can do the job I'm asking for, right? And so if your resume speaks and says, hey, you know, I played this many chess tournaments, I've taught this many courses, I've trained kids. Hey, great. You're not telling me how great of an engineer you are, but your skill set matches to what I need. And so I'm more likely to notice you and hire you.
No, it's what so you work with early to mid-career folks, and I work with the later half of life, mid-career all the way up to executive level. And I see that same mistake. You know, so often they have 20, 30, 40 years of experience, and they have done a little bit of everything, and they struggle to let go of it.
It is a struggle.
But it's so important to pull out what's relevant, because this is your brochure, right? It's your marketing brochure. It's not your blueprint. That's what I was like. It's not your blueprint. It's your brochure.
That's right.
Okay. So jack of all trades resumes are prevalent clearly across all career stages. What is a common pitfall or mistake you see on the LinkedIn side of things?
For one, I see that it's not done. Basically, they will leave the banner empty. They might not have a professional headshot. They might not have a clearly defined tagline. Their about section is a jumble of words. It doesn't speak, similar to the resume. It has no target as well. That's one of the things I see. They're not clearly defined on the skills that are applicable to their target job. And again, it's more of that generalization of like, here is everything, right? Like, this is all I can do. And from what I talk with people, their hopes is somebody will notice and this will resonate with them, this piece, and then we'll talk. But the thing is, you know, they're not going to be reading every single word in your resume. They're not going to be reading every single word in your LinkedIn, especially during the first pass. And so they might land on something that they're not looking for and disqualify you right then and there.
That's right. And if your documents aren't targeted, your searchability is going to be hurt as well, because you won't be, the keywords that you use in the different areas mm-hmm. aren't going to be as targeted, right?
Yeah,
as absolutely. Part of LinkedIn is being found on search.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I agree with that. So now let's talk about number three, networking, which is, I think, such a superpower when it comes to job search. What advice do you have for, you know, either building or re-engaging or reaching out to maybe a more dormant network?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the first thing I would suggest is, reach out to those individuals whom you have already built a network with. And a lot of people think, oh, I have to build something new, right? But you already have a network. You have your friends, you have your family, you have your teachers, your classmates, your previous coworkers, all these individuals who already know and trust you, whom mm-hmm. you can literally go in and ask like, hey, you know, I really want to be working at Google, for example, if that's your goal, right? How can I get there? Right. And it's just this genuine question, but that's also because you have a target, right? Once you understand that, you can ask these genuine questions and trigger these responses where people are more willing to help you because you know where you're going. So that's where I would say. And a lot of these individuals, they might not be able to help you, and that's okay. If they can't, they never worked at Google, that's fine. But you can say something like, how do I get there? And they will be more than happy to give you some piece of advice, connect you with someone who's a little closer, and therefore your network begins to genuinely expand in the direction that you actually want to go, rather than just saying, who should I talk with next? I'm looking for a job. And they might say, well, I have a recruiter friend. I don't know. They might hire, right? But there's no direction. So having that direction and utilizing your existing network to increase your network in the direction that you want to go is incredibly important.
No. You know, what I like about what you said in terms of just starting with the people that are more familiar with you is that there's not as much on the line if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
If your explanation of your target isn't as polished as you'd like, or your explanation of your accomplishments is sort of rusty. Mm-hmm. These are people that know you that are going to forgive those sorts of mistakes in a way that speaking with a total stranger might not be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the other thing I would say also is, at one point, you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone because mm-hmm. you're going to have to be meeting new individuals, right? If the CEO of Google was in your network, you wouldn't be asking for this, right?
Right, exactly.
So you have to be able to get out of your comfort zone. With that, I would say don't be afraid of failure, of having extremely awkward interviews or networking meetings or informational interviews, whatever you want, because that awkwardness is better off out of the way now when the stakes are not high than when you are actually get called in for an interview and have to talk to this individual, and then you're stumbling and it's just awkward during something that has higher stakes. So don't be afraid to, you know, make a fool of yourself a little bit at first, and just know that things are going to get better. You're going to become more naturally adept at being able to talk to people. And in honest, with networking, I found that the key is giving, finding a way to give back, even if that means giving your time, your attention, your praise. It's a lot of times the things that don't have material value that actually end up touching people the deepest and creating connections that wouldn't otherwise be there.
So can you, so for a new graduate, for instance, what could they, how could they give back to someone that's more senior to them?
Yeah. So, and that's where we can tie it up to having your target, right? So let's say somebody wants to be an R&D engineer. That's the target of the new graduate. And they find somebody who is an R&D engineer. If they can make a connection, you know, you can genuinely show up and say, what do you do every day? You know, what is your life like? What are the challenges? What are the things that excite you? And that, just the genuineness that you have shows that you have an interest in this person. And that's you giving your attention, giving your time.
Okay.
And this individual, it touches their ego and okay. It makes them feel great, right? Like somebody's willing to talk to me, like kind of like you reaching out to me, touch my ego. And I'm like, oh, happy to talk to Virginia. Oh. and so okay. New graduates, being able to give that full attention and even praise. You know, it's like, wow, it's great that you were able to achieve this with your company or this milestone. You know, it's like, okay. Can you tell me more about this? Like just that genuineness can go so far.
And so I love that. And you're saying that it, because these conversations are, they aren't high stakes interview. It's okay to sort of get your awkwardness out of the way and you shouldn't flip out if the conversation doesn't go off without a hitch. Okay.
No, exactly. That's what I found helps quite a bit. And it goes back to, I guess this is more of a buzzword, right? Authenticity. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we tend to pretend to be who we think the other person wants mm-hmm. us to be, right? And I've seen people get hurt in interviews because they think, oh, they want this type of person in this job. And then they try to fit into that mold. And when they go into the interview, it looks clunky, awkward. And The worst thing is if you actually do get the job, now they expect you to live this life while you're working there, right? Because that's the persona you've created. But if you can be genuine and you can talk to this individual as you would talk to your friends, right? You're just genuinely interested in them. They're more likely to connect with them because, again, there is no high stakes. They're not going to work with you. It's just a time for you guys to chat, to share information. And if they hire you, because ultimately I believe that your authentic self is your greatest asset. If they say, hey, I really like this person. I like talking with them. I like teaching them. It becomes not far out of reach that they might say, maybe we can find a job for them, right? Just because the way they interacted with you, it wasn't
fake. You're so impressive. I have seen that happen so often, or where they're having sort of preliminary discussions on postings, jobs that are maybe in the works, but haven't been finalized. And then the person, especially smaller companies, they might say, this would be, because I see this in you, I think this could be a role that could work out. Let's create something. Let's piecemeal some other responsibilities together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the part I would say, the moment you're able to get the other person to take a genuine interest in you, because you have a genuine interest in them, they are way more likely to help you and move mountains. And that's where you begin to actually grow your network, right? I there's a misconception, I believe, that people think my network is the number of people I have on my LinkedIn or the number of people that I know by name or et cetera. I believe that your network is actually the number of people who are willing to take positive action in your behalf. And if you can get somebody to do that, great. Your network is working. It's doing what it's supposed to. And that's the big difference. It's not about the number of meetings and metrics and names. It's about how many people are actually moving the needle for you.
So it's better to have a network of mountain movers than 1,000 more shallow connections.
Yes. Yeah.
No, you're quite right. And that, I think, is for someone who's maybe younger or starting out. You do feel at a disadvantage to someone who's been working longer and knows more people, but you might have the same number of people willing to go that extra mile for you.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, you can make a deep enough impression with just a few interactions, and that can be enough for you to be able to reach out months later and still, you know, reconnect just as well because you have left such a great mark. To give you an example, I had a project as an undergraduate where I had to, it was a group project, and I knew that one of our team members wasn't, this individual had too much on their plate. And I knew that. And so I carried the load for him, right? And I didn't do it out of like, oh, I have to do this for me. No, I was like, this is a group. We're taking care of each other, right? So we did the best we could, and we carried on. I talked with him. I never pointed the finger. I was just, again, very, very caring in giving some support. And after the project, I figured, yeah, we'll go on our ways, et cetera. Never talk to each other again, right? That's what I thought. But that very action of helping somebody when they needed it was, it must have left such a deep impression that even years later, so it's been 5 years or so, mm-hmm. they still reach out to me whenever there's an opening in their team.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. And that's impressive. Like, yeah.
Hey, there's something, some, you know, are you looking for a job? This is about to open. And this person reaches out to me before the thing is even open.
The top of mind. Yeah, no.
Yeah. And I think the reason is because they know that I care for them when I didn't have to. So how much better would it be when I'm actually paid to make sure my team succeeds, right? And so that trust is just greatly there. It's created based on small acts, just, you know, caring and giving.
No, you're absolutely right. Sort of, I guess, pivoting a little bit back to the target conversation, I wanted to get your thoughts on what, you know, how do you help that person who has maybe does have a couple of years of experience under the belt, and they have a diverse set of skills, and their next role can be in a number of different directions. Is there a different way or additional advice you might share to help them to whittle down their target?
Yeah, I would also default a bit to networking, trying to understand what these different directions might look like and how well do they fit on their previous experiences, right? Like the things that they want, what do they want out of life, for example, what is most likely to get them there? And networking will give you a bit of a high level. The other thing I would suggest is go to Udemy, extremely cheap. Just wait for a sale for $10 courses and try one of those out. Do a project, do a couple projects, and then ask yourself, like, do I want to do this for a living? Or which one of these do I want to do more than the others? And why? So
I always thought Udemy was courses. Is mm-hmm. it? So, but you can do some real life project simulations there?
It depends. So I looked into data science at one point. And so in Udemy, they will teach you like the techniques, the skills, right? For me, it was, for example, how to visualize data, how to tell a story with data, things like that. So what I did is I grabbed what I learned and I started to applying it to my own life. So for example, my time management and my finances, which are sources where I have, you know, mountains of data. And now I just basically created a project to analyze it and create some tangible results, which I ended up putting on my resume. But it basically taught me, if I were to do this day in and day out, would I enjoy it, right? The work itself, would I actually enjoy doing this? And sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes it's no, but unless you try it out, you won't really know for yourself.
I love that suggestion to do Udemy, because I know, in some roles, you can sort of test the waters through volunteer work, but not always. Right. And this might be something you could do from home, and it can be done in a shorter stint versus volunteering for a year or something like that before you decide if this is in fact for you or not. But this it's a safe way to explore. I like that.
No, for sure. It's at your own pace. And even when you do network, you can ask individuals, how could I get a feel for what their work is like? And they can suggest things like either projects or even just taking on slightly different tasks in your current job that might relate more to where you're trying to go next. And they will say, yeah, that's basically what 80% of the job is like. And you get to know, like, do I really like doing this or not?
Yeah, no, really good advice. So a lot of the, you know, the three-step job search works great if somebody comes to you and says, I'm getting ready to start looking for a job. But what about that person? I get this all the time. People that come to me and they have been job hunting and it's not going well. At this point, they're frustrated. Their finances might be dwindling if they don't have a current job. What advice do you have to help someone sort of regroup and sort of land more quickly?
So the first question I will ask him is, what kind of job are you looking for? And that will let me know if they have a target or not.
And back to the target question,
yes, if they say anything, that's, for me, a red flag, for one, because we need to figure out, like, what do you want? And if your finances are dwindling, okay, then let's find a job that will allow you to keep you afloat while we actually figure out what you want to do out of your life, right? It doesn't have to be your dream yet. You just need to be able to meet, pay the bills, and basically, it's kind of like college. It's a step up. Nobody wants to stay in college forever, like, but it's a step in the right direction. So that's what I would say, depending on their circumstances. If they do say, yeah, I do have a target, I want to do this, my next question would be, how often are you getting called in for interviews for this particular job? Mm-hmm. And that will let me know what we have to work on. Because if they are getting interviews, that means let's check on the frequency. If it's at a frequency that you expect and you're comfortable with, then let's talk about turning interviews into job offers. And once you have job offers, then we can talk about negotiations. But if you don't have interviews, we need to start focusing on getting you interviews a lot. That has to be your norm.
Figuring out where the bottleneck might be occurring.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. Because I know on my end, if someone comes to me and has told me they want help with their resume because in interviews they're not doing well, often I say, if you're getting interviews, it's probably not your resume, it's something else, right?
Yes, exactly.
But there are different places in the job search in this journey, and there are different parts in the process where a breakdown can happen. So identifying where that bottleneck is important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll be surprised. A lot of people do have, a decent resume, and they utilize their network, and it gets them the pre-screening calls or interviews. Mm-hmm. They just can't move it beyond that point. But if you're getting a bunch of interviews, that means that your foundation is working, right? Like your resume, your brand, all of that stuff is getting you noticed. Now let's just work on your presentation to actually get you the job.
That's right. Or some people are getting past the first rounds, but then are always finalists. So then you know they're struggling with closing, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Well, you have answered so many of my questions. Thank you so much. I always like to close out with the question, what is next for you? Because I'd love to, give you the platform a little bit to share what's on the horizon for you. We're right now in October of 2022. So 2023 is around the corner. What are your plans?
Yeah, thank you so much for that opportunity. So as I mentioned, I've been helping people with the job hunts for a long time. And one thing that I noticed was I loved helping people, but for me, it also felt like a little bit of a Band-Aid. And that's why I decided to move and pivot into that proactive approach. So right now, we're in October, I am going through a beta program for what I call the Fearless Career. And that is to help people be proactive. And that is going to focus on a couple of particular pillars. And that is time management, because if you have the mentality of, I don't have time, you're going to be stuck. It doesn't matter where you are. If you don't think you have the time to invest in yourself, you're going to stay stuck. Mm-hmm. So that's the first obstacle. Then it's going to be the mindset of, I can't afford to lose my job. And for as long as you have the mentality, I can't afford to lose my job, it becomes extremely difficult for you to take any sort of risk, not without that fear getting in the way. Now, once you overcome this, that's your foundation. We're going to talk about career clarity. And that's discovering, what will you do next? Where are you? What are you working towards? Whether it's in your life, in your career, what is your purpose, your goal? And once you've discovered that, then we'll move into that job hunting in a proactive state. Well, even though you're employed, you're still networking, you're still moving in the direction, and you're not being reactive to what the world throws at you or where your company thinks you should be going next. You're taking more charge. And the outcome that I'm hoping it will have for people is the outcome that it had for me. And that is, you're not afraid to take risks anymore. You're not afraid to challenge the system or be transparent. Or when somebody says, what do you think about this next project? You can give them your honest opinion and say, I have concerns about A, B, and C, and this is why. Because now you don't fear it. You don't fear what might happen if they say, no, you either do this or find something else. Because at that point, you know who you're working for one, but you also know exactly what your next step is. and you're not reactive to any negative consequence. You can show yourself as your best self. And one of the biggest things that will do for you is it will ensure that you don't take that stress and anxiety and fear and potentially anger back home to your families, because you can present yourself, do your best at work, and then you can go home and be your best with your family. So during January, I'll be launching the official program of the Fearless Career. And I hope it has a transformational experience for many individuals that will go through it.
So this is sort of a precursor to that three-step job search process.
Yes. So the three.
Okay. So proactive career management. I love that. And the idea of not taking the negative emotions back home. Jobs take up a lot of our time. And when you're not feeling like your best self, it's hard not to have it run over. So I think.
It is super hard. Yes.
You're better you, and it makes for a better, stronger, healthier family as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was the biggest thing that I saw in my career change. The moment I stopped being so dependent on my circumstances and I started taking control, that's mm-hmm. where I felt like I could come home with time, with energy, and I could just devote it to the people that I care most about. Because the other side of that, when I felt like I was pushed, pressured, and, you know, pulled in ways I didn't want to be, I got home and I was drained not only of my time, but also my mental energy.
Yeah, you feel victimized.
Yeah, no, exactly. You just don't want to deal with it. And that's what we see, at least in our community, is, you know, people default to TV and phone because that's just a quick distraction, a disconnect. You don't think about your problems, but the problems are still there, you know, and you can ignore them, but eventually they'll come back.
Gosh, well, thank you. Eric, if people want to connect with you, I have shared your LinkedIn profile and your website, eCoaching22, on the bio that will be available as part of the podcast. Are those the best places to reach out to you, or is there anything else, any other socials that you'd like to share?
Yeah, LinkedIn's usually the one I'm mostly on. So people are okay. Very welcome to connect, send me a message, and I'm happy to chat, jump on a call, you know. Just here to help out others.
Well, Eric, thank you so much. I've learned a lot, I love your voice. I love how you're sharing it. And what you did was you broke down a process that feels really complex and emotionally draining into something that is actionable. And you're giving people a way to take control of their immediate future and then sort of longer term as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity, Virginia. It's wonderful to be able to discuss things with other individuals, especially when, you know, people like you who understands how important this kind of work is for other people, their families, and even their progress in their careers, their lives, their mindset. So I really appreciate this time.
Well, it was my pleasure.
You've been listening to The Resume Storyteller with Virginia Franco. To learn more about storytelling strategies to catch the eye of today's online CM hiring and decision makers, please visit www.virginiafrancoresumes.com.